Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Hi, Shireen.
Hello, Anna. Wow. This is Ethnically Ambiguous. This episode genuinely was so, so fun. We kept talking off mic forever because we just like were, I don't know, commiserating and also honestly shit talking. But
yeah,
that's all in the episode.
You'll never hear it, okay?
What's in the episode? We are joined by the amazing Aaron Thorpe. He's a podcast host. He's an organizer. He just has a big brain, and I'm just glad he shared some of it with us. And yeah,
stay tuned.
You'll like it too much.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi, Anna.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm Shireen.
Oh, yes.
I already
Anna.
Said your name. That's Anna.
Yeah. Oh, Anna,
this is Ethnically
Anna.
Ambiguous. I don't know how long we have to do this until I start the podcast. Well, I think during quarantine, it's gone a lot worse for some reason. There's no, like, I can't be in person and, like, read the vibes of, like, or, like, see if you're going to talk or not, you know? I'm just kind of winging it.
Yeah. And I am not talking, so that's always an issue. I'm not contributing to the podcast at all. There is
true.
A thing, though, where when I come to my own show, I'm like, oh, thank God it's my own show. I don't have to try. But
right,
actually how it shouldn't be. I should try because it's my own show. I only try when I'm guesting because I'm like, I gotta be a good guest. And then I come, I'm like, oh, Shireen, you know how it is. I'm just not going to say anything today. This is my safe space to make a terrible podcast.
Well,
sorry.
I can pick up the silences, you know, I don't mind.
You
I just
pick up
like,
the silences or just not saying anything. You're like, I have a keen sense to pick up silence.
Well, sometimes if I'm waiting for a little bit and you're just like kind of nodding, I'm like, okay, I will step
so
in
mean.
Again. I will step in again. I don't know how much weed you smoked that day. I don't know the vibes, you know, so.
How dare you? I've never smoked weed in my life. I'm just joking. I wish I was high right now. I've been actually pretty good. I have not been hitting the vape pen until I'm done with all my work. But boy, do sometimes I get the end. Oh, I just,
wow.
Someone says something to me or I get an email where I'm like, oh, fuck you. Which is like every 5 minutes. But
yeah,
I just really am like done with Outlook. I think companies need to phase out Outlook. I don't give a shit how corporate you are.
It's
stop
so dumb.
Using Outlook. It is impossible
Outlook is
to
so
find
outdated.
Any email. You literally, you send an email, it's gone forever. You have no reference point to it again. They're just like, sorry, we don't know. The email sent, but you will never be able to look at that email you sent ever again. Search every word you put in that email. Fuck off.
Yeah, it's archaic to say the least. But do you want to intro this guest? No, it's okay. They were good. I'm glad we got that out of the way. We can vent about archaic tech with this guest, not to drag her.
If I'm using the same email program as my mother, we have a problem, okay?
Very true.
I just took my socks off because I got so heated. It got hot in here. Okay, let's bring in our guest.
Do the honors. Go ahead.
I forgot to ask him a few things before we started, as in how he would like to be introed, but that's how we do it, baby. I don't put any effort in when it comes to my own show. But based off his Twitter bio, which, yes, he is back on Twitter. You guys might be surprised.
I was surprised.
Yeah, you didn't know he was back on Twitter. I was like, he's back, baby.
I'm just dumb. Like, I'm bad at Twitter.
He's based out of Atlanta. So he's like, in my mind, like, I mean, his last Twitter handle was the way he described himself, but like low key, like, I don't understand anything on the internet. So I was like, sure. Okay. If that's what you are, then that's what you are. But he is a...
What was that Twitter handle?
It was like the Posadist.
Right.
Am I saying that wrong? Right. Wait, no, there was another part to it. Posadist Trap?
Posadist Trap God.
Trap God. There you go. Thank you.
Of course.
Just pretend he didn't have to correct me there for a second. Yes. So I don't know what a Posadist Trap... I know what a Trap God is, but I don't know what that first word means at all. To me, I was like, like the ocean. But then I was like, what?
Oh,
I don't know.
Are you thinking Poseidon?
Yes. Correct.
Poseidon Trap God.
I was like, that's where he got that from. But no, I'm just dumb and don't read enough. But he's like, in my mind, like, the thing is, like, I hate the context of, like, dirtbag left, because a lot of these people who we refer to as dirtbag left are straight up trash bag, put them away, I never want to hear you speak again left. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't fall under that category, but I feel like people might put him in that category. But he's, in my mind, he's like a socialist cultural commentator who also makes me laugh on Twitter. Where would I put that? I don't know. I feel like I just labeled him, but I didn't mean to. But he also hosts podcasts like The Trillbillies. He hosts A Time for Monsters. I have to remember Adam. A Time for Monsters podcast. He had another podcast, which I don't know if he wants me to bring it up because I only saw on Twitter there was some drama, but we'll ask him. And so we have Aaron Thorpe here.
After that long introduction.
I have 45 more things to say about you. Sit tight.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, for real. And it's nice to see you again, too.
Yeah. I'm glad we could get you on. Did I describe you? Well, I don't know how to describe you. Was that good enough?
Yeah, that was good enough. I mean, like, the whole dirtbag left thing, like, I'm part of the dumbass left because I don't really know anything, you know?
But
I am also a dirtbag.
See,
you know?
That's where I see myself as well, as like, dumbass left is like, I would love socialism to be the status quo, but I don't read enough.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, like, the more you know, the more you don't know. And, like, you know, people like to make, especially, like, people that think about politics, they like to make prognostications about the future. And I'm like, dude, I don't fucking know what's going to happen.
Right.
You know?
No, not at all.
But I know what should happen. I know what I feel in my heart is right. So, you know. But yeah. I'm a dumbass. I'm part of the dumbass left,
I do like that. Like, an agnostic left. Like, you're just like, I just accept that I don't know. You know, like, exactly. I'm going with the flow here. But I'm still left.
I will say, like, the concept of the dirtbag left was really... I'm not going to start naming names, but they were like, we're the dirtbag left, and then bought their own shit so hard that they became like straight up, like, I don't even know, like,
high on their own supply kind of.
Yeah. And then they all of a sudden, in my mind, I'm like, these are just straight up doomsday preppers. Like, these people are the worst and I can't handle listening to them anymore. Yeah. And so they just like kept going further and further and further. And it's like, well, cool. I really like that. The point that you were making some pretty good points. But then, and then you just went so far that I was like, you're not a dirtbag left anymore. You're just an asshole.
Right.
Yeah, I don't even know what to even, like, you're just not fun. That's my way of being like, you're not fun.
I think a lot of, like, actually, that's a really good point, because, like, I think that it came out of, like, you know, mostly, like, white people, like, young white people who, I guess, didn't feel like they were, like, anywhere economically mobile. Although, I can say that a lot of these people, like, I mean, I don't want to call names, but people come from like, you know, well-to-do backgrounds, right? Oh, yeah. More or less kind of being a young millennial and feeling kind of displaced and alienated in the world, having this sense that something is wrong, coming out of the Occupy movement and then yeah. Bernie and whatnot. And like kind of feeling like the way that the Democratic Party did politics, you know, this sort of prefigurative politics that was mm-hmm. like just completely hollow and performative, yeah. right? And being able to talk about healthcare for all, but also like using the word fuck and talking about doing mm-hmm. cocaine and talking yeah. about being like, you know, a dirtbag. Like, I get all that, but I mean, and maybe we'll get into it, but it's like a lot of that world comes out of like, you know, like, I mean, it's white people doing
yeah,
this, you know?
Right.
I mean, it's like white neckbeards, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, I mean, yeah, I have those very similar experiences being a millennial, but also as a black dude, you know, I have different experiences as a black leftist. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
But a lot of those people are cool, man. And like, you know, I mean, I guess I am a dirtbag too, so I vibe with it, you know?
I mean, I don't know. I think white people especially, like they kind yeah. of make their identity something. They're just yearning to have an identity that is something. And so I think that especially yeah. with politics, leftist politics, I mean, even right politics, when they find something that like they can really make their life, they go very hard. And
exactly.
like sometimes I respect it and usually I don't. Only because like your identity shouldn't just be like one thing. It shouldn't be a political ideology. It shouldn't be a diet. It shouldn't be anything. You're yeah. just like, please just exist. You don't need to
yeah.
be the spokesperson for every fucking thing.
Yeah.
But I do think it comes from a place of privilege because mm-hmm. privilege and this need to have an identity so desperately.
I will say there are some white people do it right. And then the others, you're like, fuck you.
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is downplaying privilege, right? It's yeah. like, you don't, and also, like, if you come into leftist politics and you come from, like, you know, a privileged family, like, you might feel weird yourself about, like, how, like, you know, you came into this, your family came into this socioeconomic position. And I get that's, like, might be uncomfortable for people. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Me personally, let me talk about this. Like, I'm the son of, like, West Indian immigrants, right? But because my family was able to come here, they got amnesty under Reagan, Ronald Reagan, and they oh, were wow. able to get their citizenship and came here at a time where, yo, now they like, you know, bought a home, right? And they've like rented it out,
yeah.
you know? And like, that's something that like kind of was, I don't know how much of a dream it is now because a lot of horrible things happened along the way.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was like, that's something that I can admit. Like I've been to countries that like most like white Americans have never even been to,
mm-hmm.
right? So I can admit that, but I feel like a lot of other people, like they have to keep playing up this image, you know what about,
yes.
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
about
no.
who they are. And it's like, motherfucker, like, you're a trust fund baby. It's cool, man. Like, yeah. I'm not knocking you, dude, you know?
I think I came to the realization of the difference between white people and privilege and people of color and privilege or, like, any marginalized group. I think the main difference is mindfulness because usually, mm-hmm. if you're a child of immigrants, immigrants in general, you are raised to be very mindful of the space you occupy, how mm-hmm. you present yourself, how people are presenting themselves to you. You become so almost like insufferably mindful of everything you're doing. Whereas white people have never had to do that. Most like Americanized white people, I don't think exactly. have ever really had to think of how they have to be small or how they have to like be the model minority. So mm-hmm. I think in that situation, there's a lack of mindfulness when it comes to privilege too. Like they don't even, they haven't been, they, there's no reason for them to stop and think like, maybe I should examine this because they're going, their yeah. life is going great, good because of their privilege, yeah. you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not denying that there are poor white people and struggling white people and just mm-hmm. disabled white people. Everyone can occupy a marginalized group, but there's an element of mindfulness that I think is lacking with the majority of privileged white people. And I would urge them to just be mindful in general because I think we all have to be mindful by, like, it's, like, ingrained in us.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're walking on eggshells, right?
Yeah, yeah. And you know when someone's, like, going off and you're like, damn, so you've never been smacked by your immigrant mother, huh?
yeah, exactly.
Like, wow, call
what is that like?
We've all had that moment where it's, like, you see your white friend call their mom a bitch and you're like, how are you still alive?
Like, y'all ever see the boo dots?
Of course.
Yeah, yeah.
It's that episode where granddad is shopping with the kids and that white mother, her son, is like yelling at her in the supermarket. And granddad, and she's so stressed out because this kid is like throwing shit and shrieking. Yeah. And granddad just takes off his belt and just hands it to her. And he's like, go ahead, whip it. And she whips it. Like she realizes that she has this newfound power.
Yeah.
And the kid is like, oh shit. Oh no. It starts running away. Yeah. I'm like, you never got your ass beat. Your mother never threw a shoe at you, yo. That's why you don't know. Not saying child abuse is cool, okay? It's not child abuse.
No, no. It's
hard. It's tough love, you know?
Like, my dad's like, I got, like, if I was late to school, they would beat the shit out of me. And you're like, ooh. And so he's like, you're lucky I just slapped you. And you're like, oh my God, okay. Right. But it's true. Yeah. They come from a different world.
It's a different world. I will say there is a fine line. I think when people hear that, they do think of like, oh, you were abused as a child versus us. So it's just like, mm-mm. I mean, most people, I do think there's a fine line. I don't deny that there's probably a lot of abusive parents, like people of color and white, you know, but I do think the majority of the time we are raised with this, like, just tough it out. Don't cry. You're too sensitive mentality, especially for like, I don't know, me and Anna were the sensitive ones in our family. So we were always told that just to tough it up and not be a baby.
But, yeah, my dad told me that a lot.
Yeah. So I'm so blessed to be surrounded by the sensitive people in their family. Exactly. It makes me feel at home.
The soft ass left. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's like, even like, it's like sensitive in the sense you're like, man, the police are really killing people a lot, huh? Maybe we shouldn't have them. And then my dad will be like, you would die without the police. So stop being so sensitive. And you're like, wow, I didn't think that was sensitive. I just thought I like cared about humanity. But no, you're right. My bad. Like, what?
Right.
I thought I was being a humanist.
Right? Yeah, I thought I was just being like, that's not right.
I thought I was having empathy. You know, it's like, I don't know. I think especially when parents are just like the older generation, they don't understand mental health very well. I think any sign that their child is going through something, they think like they just don't get it really. And I think that's a big reason too why there's like a big disconnect, because they're just focused on survival a lot of the time. They don't have the luxury of sitting and thinking about how they're feeling. So like, I don't think a lot of parents actually ask their child like, how are you feeling? Not like, how was your day? How are you, like, how are you actually feeling? And I don't think anyone's asked them either growing up. So it's not their fault. I just think there's like a unfortunate disconnect there that I hope we bridge someday. I think the current generation that's younger than us and the one younger than them, they have so much promise because they're already so much more progressive at such a young age because they just have access to so many things. So I have some hope.
My dad, man, like, because I was diagnosed with clinical depression, like, in my teens, and my dad found out.
Yeah.
You know, I love my father, man. But, you know, sometimes you say things to your children or even your parents, right, that you regret. And he just didn't understand why, like, I was depressed. Like, he didn't get it, right? Like, you know, my mom would ask me why, and I'd be like, I don't know, dude. Like, it's just, like, wake up and feel this way.
Yeah.
And, like, one time he was like, I wish you weren't born, is what he said to me, man.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, he regretted it so heavily, like, later in, you know, later in life, towards the end of his life. But it was just, like, you know, I'm pretty sure that he suffered from mental depression and anxiety, but that was something that growing up in Jamaica in like the, you know, the 50s and 60s, whatever, that's not something that you could talk about, you know, in such a machismo sort of culture.
Yeah.
You know, also like even in the United States and the West, you know, the medicine and the field of study around mental illness isn't where it is today.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So, I mean, I relate to that so hard because I was also diagnosed as a teen. And
weren't we all bitches?
I mean, but our parents didn't get it. They were just why are you complaining? Like, why are you being a baby? Why are you complaining?
Yeah, your life is great. Like, you have a room. You have a bedroom.
Yeah,
you have a roof over your head.
Yeah. But I think also similar to you, I think a lot of my family, like my extended family, some, like my parents at times, I think they've also dealt with mental like health issues. They just actually don't confront it. And I'm actually a little proud of myself because through this journey of having mental health and stuff, I think my father, like in his 50s, he had anxiety and then he like pursued seeing someone about it because he was like, I understand that my daughter needed help. She seems okay. But at the same time, similar to you, my parents have both said some very cruel things to me. They're much better now. Like we have a much better relationship. But when I was like going through it, I didn't know how to express my emotions. So I became really angry. And they would say things like, I mean, I don't want to quote them, but some really cruel things about how people, how I make people feel, how I don't know. Damn. So I But those are like, I don't think they remember that. I think we remember that, you know?
Yeah, remember that. Yeah.
They don't remember shit they said. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember shit.
I remember my dad is, in my opinion, I don't know how, like, what his mental illness status is. I think he's just thinks he has, like, real grandiose ideas of himself, mostly maybe a narcissist. I am not a doctor, guys. I really should not be,
I shouldn't
be diagnosing anyone. But I will say, when I go to Iran and I am surrounded, and I haven't been in 4 years because, 5 years now, because last time I was there was the Muslim ban, and it gave me so much fucking anxiety being there.
Jesus fucking Christ.
But being there, and I've been going to Iran my whole life, and my families both have huge families, but being there specifically, my mom's side is really Muslim, so they're all very proper and don't say anything. But my dad's side, which like has fun and is down, is secular, they're cool. Like when we're like all together and I just like look, I literally have a memory of looking around and being like, all these damn people are mentally ill. Yes. Like just the fights they get into, the shit they say, like how they act towards each other. And I'm like, oh my God, they're out here literally trying to be like, we don't know why you're so depressed and so anxious all the time. And I'm like, look at my bloodline. Look at all of you. I can't say that out loud, obviously, but I like will look around and be like, that was like a great moment for me because I was like, oh, there you go. All these people.
Yeah.
This is why I'm fucked up. These people are all fucked up but don't admit it. And this is where I'm from. And it's like nice to actually physically see it and be like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like everything starts making sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. My dad's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like, I bet you don't. But I do. I know damn well what I'm talking about because I've seen it now. That's your mistake for bringing me here because I've seen it all.
Unfortunately, I think... I mean, I relate so much. I think so much of my family struggles with mental health issues, and some of them are still in Syria. And I've had some cousins that have been diagnosed with schizophrenia. And in Syria, they don't even know what that, like how that treatment even works. Like they don't even really talk about that. And so, but you need treatment for something like for psychosis, for all of that stuff. You really need to be treated. So it just really breaks my heart that we're so kind of far behind in so many different things. And I'm proud of some of my aunts and uncles for like seeking help for their depression and stuff. But I just wish it was more, I think they still deep down have a stigma about it. And I wish that can kind of be undone. I did find, so I have a poetry book, and in the poetry book, I put quotes that my parents told me when I was really depressed and like very like lashing out and all the stuff. So my mom told me one time, how can you have such a black heart? And she said,
what are you, Joan Jett?
She said, when you speak, I can't breathe. My heart hurts and my lungs don't work. And without realizing it, I hold my breath. It isn't until you stop speaking that I can breathe again.
Your mom said that?
My mom said that.
How dare they be so dramatic?
I love my mom. Everyone knows on this podcast, she's my favorite person in the world. I love her immensely, but that's what my depression did. That's what how they interpreted it. They were just like, you're making us miserable because you're miserable. Why are you doing this?
That's wild.
And yeah.
For them to be like, you are so dramatic. I cannot even breathe when you're talking. It's like,
I'm kind of seeing a connection here. The last thing I'll say before I go to a break. Again, I'm obsessed with my parents. They have got, our relationship has come a long way, but I was like the troubled one growing up. My dad told me, I just wrote these down because I was just like, I'll never forget this. He said, I was going to pray to God today. I wanted him to make sure there would be someone who'd love you more than anything, so much that you'd feel as if you couldn't possibly love anymore. And I wanted to pray that this person would hurt you the way you hurt me, but I couldn't do that.
What the fuck? Parents are so out of control sometimes.
God damn, it's just like, yo, your kid's just a little sad and bummed.
Yeah.
It's more than that. But your kid's just a little fucked up and be all right one day. Just support him, you know?
Yeah. I mean, again, I'm saying those out loud because everyone on this podcast knows I'm obsessed with my parents. And if we can patch that up and work past that and have a great relationship now, I just urge everyone that just to get treatment, to be patient with their family, because in those moments, I was devastated and heartbroken, and I just couldn't believe that I was hearing those things. At the same time, I believed them. I thought I was making everyone suffer, and I was like, maybe I shouldn't be here anymore, you know? So it's like a really disgusting cycle that is sometimes in your head and sometimes it's not. But anyway, I just want to bring that up because you can work through it So, like, if you really, not all the time, but I hope that you can work through it and like see that there's another side to it when it comes to sexuality or depression or anything. I think if your parents actually love you and want the best for you, they will come around.
That's good for you, because I would never let them forget they said that ever.
It's in my book.
Just remind them every birthday, every year on your birthday. Just remind them.
Oh, I mean, it's literally in my poetry book. So
I tell
like,
my dad things that he's done and said to this day. I have no shame. I mean, it's like they taught me how to hold a grudge. And guess what? Now what? I became them and they're annoyed. Well, get used to it.
Middle Easterners are so petty. They're so petty.
And I am the pettiest.
Yes.
So.
I mean, it's genetic. Okay. This has been a great conversation, but let's take our first commercial break and we'll be right back with Aaron.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And we are back.
Let's talk about Aaron, yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about you. Tell us, where were you raised and where were you born?
I was born in Brooklyn, but I was raised in Queens. And my parents are from Jamaica. And my sister was born there, but I was born here. So, I mean, I don't want to say it was a typical, like, West Indian upbringing, because I don't even really know what that means. But, like, you know, I was... inundated in culture and music. My dad was an audiophile, so he had a record shop back in Jamaica that Bob Marley used to come to. So reggae was always a thing in my house and music in general.
Oh, I love that.
And my mom ended up working for an upper middle class white family as a nanny. And my dad ended up driving trucks for ExxonMobil. So, I mean, it's pretty working class upbringing. Mm-hmm. And I'm the black sheep. My sister did all the great things and went to school, finished school, and traveled around the world, and now works for the U.S. government. So, you know.
Oh, wow.
But, man, it was a pretty tight upbringing, you know? And I try to explain to people that black culture in America, the black demographic is not monolithic, you know? So, like, again, my parents are like, sure, I'm African-American. My parents are from the West Indies. So there's just a lot of experiences that I've had that, like, black Americans typically won't have, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, even the food I ate, you know what I mean? So that's sort of, like, my humble beginnings. And then ended up moving out here a couple years ago, down here in Atlanta, Georgia, to be closer to my fam, because they had moved down here, and I was up in New York by myself trying to finish school, which didn't work out.
So. Why didn't it work out?
I don't like homework, man. So, like, I would get homework and, like, not do it and, like, not do assignments, but... More importantly, like, when I took classes that I liked, I did well, but that's why I tried to take majors that I was interested in, like, first writing and literature, and then I switched to political science, because I started getting into politics, not even organizing work, man. I used to work for the Democratic Party for like almost 10 years.
Whoa.
As like a canvasser, like not a, like a, you know, not a high level position or anything, but a canvasser, field manager, just bouncing around from campaign to campaign. Not really trying to progress, but just trying to like keep a job where I could like basically kind of tell other people what to do after I spent years knocking on doors. I would be the one to tell them, go to this place, go to this place, you know, cut the turf. And I didn't like school because as I became more radicalized, the classes that I took, the courses that I took, it was just like I was learning insane shit.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, you know, like, do you believe in Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny too? You know what I'm saying? You're telling me that the World Bank and the IMF are like good, noble institutions.
Right,
like,
right.
You know, so God.
It's like my dad teaches those courses.
Does he really?
No, but my dad says wild shit like that. My dad calls me at like, you know, 7 a.m. every morning to be like, have you seen the stock market? And I'd be like, do not do this. Literally every morning. I can't.
Because my parents, like, I don't get my politics from my folks. You know what I'm saying? I'm not like a pinko or like a red diaper baby. Like my mom and dad, like, I mean, they voted for Bernie in 2016, but they're just good liberal, like Democrats, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but just even, you know, some of the shit that like, I guess our parents can say, some of the more conservative, I mean, it's not straight up reactionary, at least not my mom, but, you know, she'll say some shit sometimes where I'm like, yo, I got to check you, you know what I mean?
Because
like, you're from Jamaica. Like, what are you talking about? You know what I mean?
Like, no, that's, I think, like, my parents are also, like, liberals, but they're technically not, they're not registered as Democrats. They're registered as independent, even though they just are Democrats. But my dad's like, no one can label me. And I'm like, okay, bro. But I don't know what that means. It's not, he's like the furthest thing from a Republican, you know, but like at the same time, I don't know. Because I'm like, just I'm as a Democrat, too. I'm not a really a Democrat, but like I vote in the primaries. And my dad's like, I don't care about the primaries. And I'm like, okay.
It's like, well, you should care about the primaries kind of if you care about electoralism, right?
I don't, there's a lot of shit. But like they say, like my dad doesn't think we should defund the police. Like that's a constant argument I have with my father. Like I had to bring up literally, and I'm like always talking shit about Villanova on, that's the LA County Sheriff who is a fucking monster. But I always bring him up on, you know, the show Twitter whenever I can to just kick his little ass. But my dad is like, no, we don't need to. The police aren't that bad. And I'm like, okay, well, how do you feel about the fact that, like, literally, these are the things I have to bring up. Like, Villanova out here taking photos of Kobe's dead body and showing them to girls at a bar. And my dad's like,
fucking
what? Like, that's the, I have to be, like, pointing out specific things because my dad loved Kobe. So he's like, no, he wouldn't. No one would do that. And you're like, yes, they will, dad. They do
And they
that.
Did. Yeah.
Like, sorry I had to get to that.
Both of our dads are obsessed with Kobe.
But it's like, that's, I have to like, you know, go hard on them to be like, that's who you like. Like, you literally just like a bad person because he has a badge. Like, that's not okay.
Right.
Like, these are, these people, you look at them and to their core, they're not okay because of what they choose to do.
Exactly.
And just because they have a badge in your mind, like, hey, dad, guess what? My brother has been in and out of jail his whole life. They have treated our family like shit. They have treated my dad like shit. And he's been kicked out of courtrooms for just being like, what? Being like, see, look what he's doing. Get that man out of here. It's like, that's that's who you're dealing with. That's who you're supporting, who have treated you like shit your whole life. That's your whole life in America. But like, it's like, their politics, I don't know. It's like impossible to like get through them sometimes where you're like, don't just stick to that status quo because it's what you're comfortable with.
Right.
Fuck
I think
Biden.
It's also,
sorry.
I think there's also like, no, it's okay. I'm just going to add that like, I think there's this respect for authority that sometimes people can't shake or like, I hate authority. I constantly questioned it growing up. I hated being told to do by teachers. It was just like something I didn't understand how people just always bow down to anything just because someone told them to. I think that's why I sucked at being an assistant, to be honest, because I was just like, what? Like, want me to drive across town for some expensive fucking pizza for your kids? Like, who are you?
That's a great way to be assistant. No, fuck you.
But like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, there's like an inherent despisement for, or like the disdain for authority. But I think a lot of immigrants in particular, and probably people of color that aren't immigrants, I think they have had to really abide by the law and by authority to survive. And I think that's hard to shake.
While also having this contradictory, you know, position where you're aware that, like, especially, like, you know, being the, you know, having a Black child where you have to tell them about, like, how to interact like during a how to behave during a police interaction, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like kind of understanding that like no matter like what you do or, you know, how well you speak or all these accolades you have because of the color of your skin, you just have to like acquiesce like to like authority, not because it's just authority, but specifically because of the color of your skin, right? Like my mom, what I think I could say for her is over the summer when the uprising last summer, when that was going on here in Atlanta, I went to a protest and she actually texted me and said that like this really long text message saying that, you know, she always thought that my views were like really radical because she like jokes around and kind of ribs me for being a communist and shit. Mm-hmm. She made me a hammer and sickle mask for like Christmas, but she's it's a joke. Yeah. You know?
Right, right.
But she's like, you know, like seeing everything that's going on now, like I see that like it makes me think about the way that I was treated when I was a nanny, you know, working as a nanny and like how like incredibly racist, you know, I mean, we're talking about like her just kind of like being treated with disdain or disrespect, or even if families were nice to her, you know, it's still like this very kind of patronizing.
Right, right.
Right. Sort of like tone or behavior. And she was like, yeah, support what you do, man. A couple of days later, I got locked up for violating a curfew. And I called her from the jail. And she was like, oh, it's fine. You know, like, okay. She wasn't even mad or anything. She was like, okay, I knew that was going to happen, you know.
Wow, gross.
So sometimes, you know, as you were saying, Shireen, before the break, sometimes like that sort of like kind of coming around and reconciling things with your parents, man. And it could even happen with, you know, especially now with our politics, the way everything is so fraught and polarized, you know.
Yeah. But they have to come to that usually by themselves, right? Like,
exactly.
Your mom had to be the one to be like, I've been really thinking about it. And I know that I've been giving you shit about this your whole life, but I see now what you were trying to get at. Like, because she was thinking about it. You were like, remember when you were a nanny? You know what I mean? Like, if that was the conversation, she'd be like,
exactly.
What?
Yeah. Liberals think it's like you can win people by like hearts and minds. And I'm not saying that as organizers, like, you know, organizers shouldn't be going out there and trying to do that. Mm-hmm. But it's not just about like making these arguments and this logic that you think will make sense, right? Mm-hmm. It's actually like trying to like connect with people on an issue where they can like put themselves in, you know, like your shoes or be empathetic, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's how you like actually create solidarity, is not by like scolding people and telling them the right things to think about. You know what I mean?
It's been proven that is the least effective way at swaying anybody, is to shame them or to scold them. Like, even if you know they're in the wrong, like it's not going to get, they're just going to dig their heels further in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But I will say they're wrong.
Yeah, I will be, especially on Twitter. I'm like, you're wrong.
Yeah.
I do think,
for sure.
My mom is a devout Muslim woman, but there's always something really funny with her because she has worked in designing CCTV her whole like career. Like, she's an electrical engineer. And she like basically since day one coming to America was like, I'm going to help America spy on Americans. And they still treat her like shit for being a Muslim. It's like, can you not do enough? I have such an interest. I got to talk to her more about it. But my mom is not really a talker. Like, she won't talk to me about shit. Like, if you guys have, if you've listened to past episodes where we called her on the show, where she's just the whole time being like, I got to go. And you're like, just sit down for 1 second. But
yeah.
That's the opposite of my mom, yo. She tries to go on forever, dude.
I would like that. That's how my dad is.
Show? Yeah, bring her on the show. She'd be a great
guest. Oh, hell no. You'll never get her to like it off.
Well, my mom has zero interest in speaking to any of us ever. But because she's like worked in surveillance, you know, making cameras to spy on us, like from as far back as I can remember, she's like, this is a police state. We live in a police state. Like, especially after 9/11, we're feeling like, you know, not talking too loud because it's after 9/11. But she's like, this is what's happening. And we'd always be like, okay, mom.
Yeah.
Bernie's gonna win. You know, like, we were all like,
she's like, sure, sweetie.
Obama's president, mom. I'm in college. Things are like cool, liberal. You know, like, I was like, what? You know, whatever, drinking and smoking and being like, don't worry, mom. Things are gonna work out. Obama's president. And she was like, mm-mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, meanwhile, she's like steely eyed, like, no, I've seen this before.
No, she's like, literally, I'm installing cameras around the house. Like, you live in a police state, you know? And then, damn, is it not annoying to talk to her now, being like, I told you this was going to happen.
Right,
this is a police state. And I'm like, okay, mom. We get it, okay?
She's like, see?
But she doesn't
honey,
say,
I'm always right.
Well, she doesn't say anything, because, like, I don't know my mom's politics, really, other than, like, she's, like, a Democrat. Like, she votes Democrat. Because she doesn't tell me anything. She doesn't say shit to us, other than, like, well, I told you this was going to happen.
And you're like,
you should prod that police state man thing a little more, man. Because yeah. I'm pretty sure she has a lot of stuff to talk about with that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is like national security shit. Please, you should
yeah.
talk about it.
Yeah, but she just, she's a Muslim woman. So she's like, well, you know, I can't say shit. I can't, literally can't say
my
shit.
My word is bond.
Yeah, like, yeah. like I don't bond. Say yeah. shit. I will never talk to you about this shit. But this is a police state. Get used to it. And it's like, I don't, I want to just fight against it. Like, let's fight against it. And she's like, I'm getting my paycheck.
But that's like the immigrant mentality a lot of the time, you know?
Yeah, she's like, I'm not going to step up and cause a problem and lose my paycheck.
Right, right. Like,
exactly, exactly.
Okay.
You keep my head down, get my day's pay, I'm good.
I think like your mom probably felt the same way, to be honest, probably. You know, Aaron, like it's just like,
yeah.
even if something did happen outright terrible, she would probably just like, she couldn't respond to it probably because she's relying on the job. So many yeah. people are like that. I've had things said to me that I've said on this podcast that are absurd. Like, just to summarize, a supervisor that I had, so she said that I was about to go jihad on yeah, I don't understand. And then everyone laughed and I was
what
just like,
fuck?
I have to
That's
keep working
just
here.
So, you've told me, when you first told me this, I think I flipped a table or wanted to because that
Why
is
would you
so wild.
Even like...
It's one thing to say it, but it's another thing for everyone to think it's a funny joke. And me just being like, what?
Yeah, like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Damn, dude.
But anyway, that aside, I'm curious. So you were working for the Democratic Party, all this other stuff. Mm. When did you kind of make the shift to, like, because that's kind of behind the scenes stuff, right? Like, when did you start to become more outspoken about your views, but whether in person or, like, on social media?
One of my friends that the friend that brought me on to campaign work, he was from the Soviet Union. And he always talks about coming over here and being like, shit, y'all got like hamburgers. You know what I'm saying? And saying the abundance of food. And this is right before the collapse at the late 80s, early 90s. And, you know, we would like talk about like politics, like policy, you know, and like kind of philosophize like, you know what I mean? Like just two dudes like drinking beers and smoking like, you know, endless cigarettes and not really watching something, but just talking about it, having it on the background. And, you know, when somebody kind of plants a seed in your mind, you start thinking about it like, I'm not just knocking on these doors and I'm not just talking about these candidates, but it's about like these people's lives who I'm talking to, right? And about all the interconnecting issues that constitute like their daily existence, like things that they have no power over, some things that they do. Like it becomes much larger than individuals, right? It's mm-hmm. about like masses, right? The masses. So I just started reading more, man. And also noticing like how cynical like the Democratic Party like establishment is, like all these liberals are. Like even the people that I was working with, you know. But it's like, I don't know, I'm a very empathetic person. So it's like when you're talking to somebody and I never really like talking about the candidate. I felt that the best way to get people to vote for a candidate or vote for a particular like ballot measure initiative is to talk to them about their lives, you know? And like, again, like we were saying, like have people have that personal connection, right? Mm-hmm. Make the political personal, right? And vice versa, I guess. And I'm just like, yo, the Democrats fucking suck, dude. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, at least like, and I paid more attention to national politics. And it's like, you know, as heinous as the Republicans are, like there's this sort of dedication that they really have to like their supposed beliefs and values that's completely absent in like this emaciated, like hollowed out Democratic Party that can only pay lip service to these issues. Because if they actually believe that Black Lives Matter or that, you know, they believed in workers' rights or they believed in any of these things, they would actually have to like implement mass politics, which they don't want to do because they fucking hate people. And that's what I realized the most. Mm-hmm. I was like, yo, these people fucking hate people.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah, it just all became abhorrent for me. And then I got into community organizing and then Bernie and then it all kind of just like.
Right.
And then the podcast and shit, I just started listening to podcasts because I was like, I can't read all the time because I was in school too. So some stuff, this is the time I was in school, so I couldn't read a lot of shit because otherwise I would find myself reading material for myself instead of like the shit I was supposed to read for my writing and literature course.
Right, you know? Right.
So I started listening to podcasts and then I guess, you know, it all kind of goes from there. Got on Twitter and all that bullshit.
Yeah. I want to ask about your various podcasts, but first let's take our last break and we'll be right back with the esteemed Aaron Thorpe.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are back with Aaron, the esteemed Aaron Thorpe. As I said, you could laugh, but I mean it. Let's talk about your podcast. Let's just go in order. Can you tell us about your first podcast, how that started, go to like the next ones? Because you have two now currently, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll start from the beginning.
Yeah. So Time of Monsters, long story short, I was part of a podcast, like a Black leftist independent media network. Mm-hmm. That didn't end up working out because I had some disagreements with my co-host. But I like podcasting a lot, you know.
That was your first like foray into it, right?
Yeah. It was called Vanguard Army. And it was just my co-host from Canada and myself living here in Atlanta, Georgia. And just talking about like, you know, politics, but through obviously like a Black North American lens, mm-hmm. right? And that didn't end up working out. But I loved doing it, though, you know. And I ended up starting another podcast called A Time of Monsters, which is from the Gramsci quote, "The old world is dying, the new one struggles to be born. Now is the time of monsters." Gramsci was an Italian Marxist who was jailed by Mussolini, I think, in the 30s, and he ended up dying in jail. But he talked a lot in his prison notebooks about how fascism arises. Mm. He talked a lot about cultural hegemony, how the ruling class elite maintains power without explicit direct violence. Mm-hmm. And I just, like, I'm a doomer, man, kind of. Like, I'm a cautious, like, mm-hmm. optimist, but really, I think things are going to be okay.
Yeah,
deep down, okay. I think things are going to be okay in the
really?
Long run. But in my okay. lifetime, in my life, of course, because, like,
in my lifetime,
like,
I'm a nihilist. Is that what you're going to say? But, like, in the grand scheme, yeah.
In the grand scheme, yeah. Because, like, as a Marxist, I think that history never ends because it's like the struggle for self-determination of working people, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, I mean, even if they try to replace every motherfucker with a robot, you know, and have us just, like, there with, like, tools, just, mm-hmm. you know, managing these machines, at some point, people are not going to take this forever, you know what I mean?
Right.
It might not be us. It might not be me. I think it would be unrealistic to say that, you know, that I'm going to be leading a revolution. More likely, I'm going to be, like, in Guantanamo Bay, like, you know what I'm saying, dying, and I'm going to lift up. I'm going to see on the TVs, I'm storming the Capitol, the right people. And I'll be like, hell yeah, you know. But it won't fucking be me.
You know, they're going to put you in Guantanamo.
Jesus. That is
what do you plan on doing?
We all go be in Guantanamo.
Yeah, that is such a dive. I mean, like, I'm a nihilist, but I didn't think it was going to be that bad.
Yeah.
I'm kind of joking, but that's the thing about me is I joke about the whole Duber thing is also a joke because it's like, and that's what Time and Monsters kind of tackles in a serious way is that, it's interviews with journalists, academics, other podcast creators and organizers, especially about like specific issues. So, you know, my first episode was actually a kind of framework for the series about historical materialism with Sean mm-hmm. KB from the Antifada. You know, I've talked to Malika Jabali, who's done great reporting on the Black electorate, you know, and a lot of other people. So, yeah, man, that's that project, which is a a little bit more serious for me. And I do weekly updates for my friends where we just kind of drink beers and shoot the shit.
Nice.
That's that one. And the Trillbillies is like, I don't know, man. If you don't know the Trillbillies, go listen to that. They're based out of Kentucky. And I went on for a couple episodes and they asked me if I wanted to come on as the fourth Trillbilly. And I was like, hell yeah.
What an honor. What an honor.
Yeah. So, I think people should really go listen to the Trills, man, especially. My show's tight, but, like, you know, go support, like, a Southern leftist media, man, especially from the comrades out of Kentucky. They're good folks.
Nice. Okay, well, you guys heard it here first. Or well, maybe elsewhere first, but go listen to them.
Yeah.
Also, it will be linked, all the shows, Time Monsters and Trillbillies will be in the description of this episode. I want to ask about your Twitter suspension. Can you talk about why you were suspended?
Oh, hell yeah, dude. I don't, even if they ban me again, I don't care. Like, but, I mean, like, I made a joke because, you know, Kristen Sinema, when she voted down the $15 minimum wage thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I wake up, yes, she did with the curtsy, with her handbag.
The thumbs up. Or the thumbs down, rather.
Thumbs down, yeah. I wake up, usually the first thing I do, because I'm deeply diseased, is, like, I check Twitter, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And usually I smoke weed first before I check Twitter. This time, though, like, it doesn't matter because I wake up mad anyway, right? Like,
right,
my girlfriend, like, says this all the time. Like, she'll hear me, like, huffing and puffing in bed and be like, what's wrong? And I'm like, she's like, how are you so mad so early? And I saw the tweet in the video the day before, but I just woke up and, like, didn't smoke it. And I was just so fucking mad that I replied to her saying something about a $15 minimum wage. She's trying to, like, you know, she's trying to save face after the outrage of that. And I said, I hope you fall into a volcano. And they banned me, like, instantly, man. But I got banned before, and, like, I got my, like, permanently, and I got my account back. Yeah, fall into a... Dude, there are no fucking volcanoes in Arizona. How the fuck would she... You know what I'm saying? Like,
I've seen so many worse things being said about so many people.
Exactly, yo. So,
I got banned. That's so funny to say.
Yeah, I got banned.
That's wild.
Yo, because, like, I don't know, man. It's like... You know, I think that's the funny thing about the whole left dirtbag left shit, or, you know, even like the online left thing, is like you could be as hyper violent as you want. And yeah, sure, in Minecraft it's a joke, but I do think that, like, the reality in it is that, like, the abolition of the system, right? And not necessarily these people, but the system. This is how angry I am that I hope you would fall into a volcano, which is some cartoonish shit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, white women culture, am I right?
Yeah.
No, actually, I take that back. It's like quirky white woman culture, where you're like, what?
I think they're actually doing something. You know what I mean?
What?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, what is your reasoning behind not wanting to raise minimum wage? Like, what? Aren't you like, what? What's your quirky thoughts on that? Like, what are you doing? Also, like, why do you have to be so, like, extra?
Yeah, they try too hard.
There's this article I kind of read. I think it was, like, I forgot what publication it was from. But she ran as a progressive, man.
Yeah.
So she ran as a progressive, and now she's just, you know, I mean, apparently right before she did the curtsy and the thumbs down, she tried to get Mitch McConnell's attention. So she wants to be a kingmaker, probably like Joe Manchin, right? She wants to have that position where she can, you know, kind of decide, like, the fate of policy, especially if it's in her favor, right?
I think that's so disheartening about so many people that even get into politics or want to be in authority. It's just like, it's kind of about clout versus any actual care for anyone other than yourself. And that's why so many politicians are just, like, jokes and scams, because they got into it for themselves, first of all, not for the people.
Mm. Also terrible for bisexual culture. Like, she's not going to be, I'm bi.
Terrible.
But poor people should die.
You're like, exactly. Why are you bringing this up?
Put that on a shirt.
We don't want you.
I'm bi, like, but poor people should die.
Like, her face on it.
Yes.
Like, thumbs down, like, you dumb bitch.
And, like, immediately everyone's like, we don't claim her, I don't want her, you know. It's just like, but I love that we've said the word curtsy like three times in this podcast.
And if we're gonna close out, can I just leave on this note and, like,
talking
about, like, Kristen Sinema and you know, being bi, but also poor people should die. It's like, I really was hyped to come on, man, because I think that, like, you know, just like, intersectionality is a word that liberals, like, overuse to the point that it's just, like, dripping and, like, sentimentality, and it's meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's super important, like, especially for, like, people of color, you know, black and brown people, You know, especially the children of immigrants, right? Mm-hmm. To kind of like start talking to one another and start kind of like recognizing that, like, yo, just because like my parents are from the West Indies, just because your parents are from the Middle East, just because your parents are from Latin America, doesn't mean that we don't have similar experiences. And a lot, we have very similar experiences and also very different experiences.
Yeah.
And a lot of what divides us in this country is like fucking racial capitalism and white supremacy trying to like, you know, tear us apart, man. So
yeah,
I'm happy to be able to talk to y'all. Yo, this is tight.
Thank you. I mean, yeah, that's kind of what we've learned doing the show is like, mm-hmm. we've had so many different people from so many different backgrounds on, and we always realize like we're more alike than we are different. Like obviously exactly. there are big gaps in our experiences because we're just different people. But when it comes down to it, it's like, we're all in this together, and we're all mm-hmm. very, we're yeah. much more similar than you would realize. So yeah, thank you so much for being so open and being on our show. This was a delight.
Well, you know, when the white genocide comes, I know y'all are on my side, man.
Oh, fuck yeah.
I'm joking. I'm kidding. I'm fucking kidding.
I should fuck yeah. I don't know. I'm also kidding.
I'm kidding. You're kidding. Parody in Minecraft.
Parody, yeah.
Oh, no, our podcast is going to get suspended. No, who cares? No. Who fucking cares?
I mean, obviously,
cares?
I'm kidding. I shouldn't kid about that because I think genocide is obviously awful, but we were just joking. Yes. We were joking.
Okay, don't cancel me. Don't cancel me. I don't give a fuck.
I feel like people are going to get mad at me because I'm always the one that's like soft. And I just did something really mean.
That's true. You always apologize where I'm like, don't fucking apologize to them. Sure.
Exactly. Yeah, right? Don't apologize.
Yeah.
But I'm also, I also got suspended on Twitter for being hacked. It's so dumb. Like there's no rhyme or reason to like what they're doing. It's like, I understand you guys are bigger than you were ever. I don't even know what you were thinking would happen. But like, What's the plan moving forward? Because this is too, it's too like, I don't even know. It's like the Wild West of Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. We're white supremacists, neo-Nazis can say whatever the fuck they want. Yeah. But I get banned for saying what everyone was thinking.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just glad. I mean, exactly. Like they just are thriving with all those disgusting things they say and all this stuff. And you just say something so comical and funny. And also, like, not going to happen ever.
The exactly. What if she
and my
falls?
Mom laughed at it. She thought it was funny.
What if she did, right?
What if she fell in a volcano? We're all like, ooh.
Like, everyone goes to you being like, what did you, did you push her in a volcano?
Nah, my Twitter is like Death Note. Yeah, like, I just put it on the TL and it happens in real life.
Exactly.
Yeah,
oh my God. Ooh. There has to be a remake of Death Note that's about Twitter. That would be
hilarious.
Yo,
we got to copyright that right now. We can't talk about that anymore. We got to plan that.
Okay,
shit.
I'm in. We're going to do this immediately after the podcast. Okay, I'm going to close this out. This has been so fun. Thank you so much again. Before we go, actually, where can people find you on the internet?
Sure. People can go to my Twitter account, which is Thaddeus Stevens, like a Thaddeus Stevens, but Thaddeus with two T's.
Perfect.
And then you can find my podcast, Time of Monsters, anywhere. You find podcasts, and same thing for the Trailbullies, anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Nice. Perfect. Yeah, and I'll just, you know the next part. This is Ethnically Ambiguous, Ethnically Amb, A-M-B on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. I'm Shireen, it's ShiroHero on Instagram, and ShiroHero666 on Twitter.
And I'm just at AnnaHosting on Twitter.
And until next time, listen to Trailbillies and Town Monsters. Do some research. Do some work.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.